a COVID question and answers session. I've got Dolores Delaney, Head of Environmental Health and Trading Standards for Dudley Council. Good evening, Dolores.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining me. And Dr. David Pitcher, Head of Healthcare for Public Health. Good evening, David.
Good evening. Great to be here.
Thank you, and thank you very much for your time. And I've also got Karen Wright, who's the Director of Public Health for Dudley MBC. Good evening, Karen.
Good evening, and thank you for having us on your programme.
Not at all. Thank you very much for your time, all of you, this evening. Now, you should be able to see this live streaming on Facebook as well, so you'll be able to see that and post your questions there. If you've got any questions for the panel, then you can drop them onto Facebook, or you can contact me via the studio in the time-honoured way, blackcountryradio.co.uk, or you can text 63446, starting your text with the letters BCR. Text, of course, will cost you 10 pence plus your standard message rate, or you can drop me an email via the Black Country Radio app. Now, we all know this. All viruses mutate, which is how they strive to survive, and this is why we have our flu vaccine every year. Now, we continue to hear about this Delta variant of concern. How concerning is it really, and how does it compare with other variants? Dr. David, first of all, please.
Yes, thank you very much. So we expect that viruses like the coronavirus will mutate, as you say. The variation that we've got at the moment, the Delta variant, is spreading a lot faster than previous variants. What we found is it spreads to more people, more contacts of an original case than the previous strains. Something like 50% more, so it's very easy to pass on. We're not entirely sure why that might be. It might be because some of the symptoms were a little bit different to the earlier strains. It may be that it makes people more infectious. There's all sorts of things that could be at the back of that. Is it more dangerous? Well, there is evidence to suggest that if you haven't been vaccinated against it, you are more likely to end up in hospital than if you had caught the earlier strains. However, the good news is that the vaccinations, particularly two doses, you really do need two doses, are very effective at stopping people from becoming seriously ill in most cases. So if you've had two doses of the jab you're unlikely to catch the Delta variant, you're less likely to become hospitalised and unlikely to die from it. But because it spreads so much more rapidly, the benefits of the vaccination are to some extent offset by the speed by which it can spread to a lot of people. And even if only a very small percentage of them become really seriously ill, a small percentage of a large number of people getting infected still means an awful lot of people going to hospital potentially, which is why we've got to bring it under control.
And this is why it's so important. And I know we hear about it so much, but it is so, so important to have both doses of the vaccine. Now, according to the Dudley News, another lockdown is expected in winter if the NHS is overrun by a rise in the cases of the Delta variant of COVID-19. That's what an expert has warned. Professor Adam Finn, who advises the government on the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, shared the bleak news that the third wave is definitely underway as infection rates rise across the country. How can he be so sure? Who wants to take that one?
I'm happy to respond, because I've been reading some of the reports today that SAGE had been, the government committee had been commissioning recently to try to understand what a third wave, or maybe it's even a fourth wave if you count the increase in cases last January, but whatever you define it as, you know, what is it going to look like? And there have been some quite scary headlines. I think the position is, at the moment, we can't be sure, because on the one hand, we have a race to vaccinate as many people as possible and give them the maximum amount of protection. On the other hand, we have a virus which does spread very rapidly and is a little bit more devious than the previous strain at getting around the vaccine. The vaccines are still very effective, but they're just not quite as effective by a few percentage points, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's a bit of a race against time. But there's also the population impact. And, you know, I think we have to give huge credit to the large numbers of people who have been following all of the isolation and social distancing and mask wearing rules and so on over the last sort of year and a half. I know it's not been easy. We've got to pay huge respect to people for following those. The extent to which people will stop following those precautions over time will also impact on how likely it is to have a rapid spread or a slow spread of the virus over winter. And so the bottom line when you read the reports and try and get beyond the scary headlines is there's a lot of factors at play here. So you can't say for certain whether we're going to have a really big wave or a really small wave or something in between, because there are too many different factors all balancing off, too many trade-offs balancing off against one another. Mm-hmm. But the indication would be, yes, we'll have more cases because it's coming up to winter, more people indoors, mixing more closely. Hopefully the vaccines will give us long-lasting protection, but we don't know quite how long it'll last or whether there'll be a new strain coming along. So all of these factors need to be taken into account. And therefore, at the moment, it's too early to say. All we can say is that we are going to be taking precautions for some time, monitoring the virus for quite a while to come yet.
What do you all think about the possible realism that we might all have to have an annual COVID vaccine like people have the flu vaccine? Is that reasonable?
Can I just come in on some of the points that have just been made and add to that? I think a really important message to get over to listeners is the best way that we actually protect ourselves and our communities and actually get things open, which we desperately want, is by actually taking up the vaccination. It's great that people are getting really, really good confidence around that. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the statistics around to having one dose actually reduces the risk of admission, somebody being seriously ill, by 75%, and having both doses actually provides between 92% and 96% of kind of protection, of, you know, reduces that risk by 96% to 92%, mm-hmm. which is absolutely fantastic. So what can we do to actually prevent the situation becoming worse over the winter? It really is by obviously taking up that vaccination, which is why there's a real push on that, as well as the other measures around identifying cases really early, which is through doing all the constant symptom-free testing, as well as any symptoms going to get one of the PCR, that's the test that gets sent off to the lab, getting one of those done. I think and there's other things as well, which I'm sure we'll come on to around the hands, face, space stuff. But I think in terms of us, you know, if we end up having or parts of the population have an annual booster, well, actually that happens around flu jabs anyway. So that, and it just becomes part of that, of us living safely with COVID moving forward. But I guess Ruth might want to say a little bit more on that.
Yes, Ruth, feel free if you'd like to come in at this point.
Yes, I'll come in on this point. So I think it is quite likely that we're going to have a booster vaccine. Whether it will be this year or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I think in future years, it's quite likely that we'll be having an autumn vaccine, hopefully alongside the flu vaccine. And, you know, hopefully in primary care, we'll be able to provide the service to do that. I suspect we'll have to extend it like we've had to for the COVID vaccine, because it will be such a mammoth task. But it's looking like it might be some of our more vulnerable patients and residents that will need that extra vaccine. So perhaps the more elderly and the people with comorbidities like diabetes and heart disease. But we're awaiting further information. There is nothing fully decided yet. There's a lot of research going on, and we are in a fortunate position that the vaccine technology is very, very sophisticated these days. So it can be adapted to the most transmissible variants.
Now, I've had both of my vaccines. I had my first one in March, and it's fair to say I felt a little off colour for 24 hours, but, you know, normality soon reigned. And I had my second one a couple of weeks ago. I haven't had any side effects, or I haven't felt grotty at all as a result of this. So how long will it take for me to get maximum protection after having that second vaccine?
So we're saying 3 weeks from the second vaccine to have maximum protection. So obviously you need to be very careful within those 3 weeks. But it's until we've got the whole of the population vaccinated, or the whole adult population vaccinated, everybody needs to carry on with the health prevention rules, really, of hands face space until everybody's vaccinated.
Now, Sue Nichols, thank you for your email. Sue has basically just asked the question that I have asked, so hopefully, Sue, that's answered your question. How is the vaccination programme being rolled out, and how is it going here in Dudley, in the Dudley Borough?
I'll start off with that one.
Please.
It's been going really well. We started in December with our older people, more vulnerable people, healthcare staff, social care staff. We've been at the sort of front of the curve all the way through. We've now got over 90% of that population vaccinated, and that's with two vaccines. So that we've vast majority of second vaccines done in the most vulnerable population. And we're now rolling out at speed the 18 to 40 year olds.
And what's that uptake been like?
I think we're at close to 60% of first dose in that group. So that's also really good figures, because, you know, we're in the early days of that. But people do seem very keen to have their vaccine. I'm really impressed by the young people coming forward to get their vaccines.
Steve Smith has emailed in, and I don't know whether you'll be able to respond to this, but Steve says, do you think that the country should open up on the 19th of July and that we can all go back to normal so we won't need all the social distancing and face masks, etc.? Dolores, have you had any thoughts on that?
I think really it's too early to say, and it does need time to see what happens over the next couple of weeks in relation to the growth in cases and the rollout of the vaccination programme. So really is too early to say. The government won't tell us until a week before.
Ned, it is a difficult one to call because we don't have that crystal ball. But I think the key message here is to do the right things that we've been talking about. And Ruth has said the hands, face, space. It's getting the vaccine. For anybody that hasn't had the first vaccine, what is the easiest way for them to go about getting that?
There's two ways to get that. The easy one to remember is to ring 119. But actually, for most people, I think going on the website is the easiest way to
That's
go
how
about
I did
your vaccine.
Mine.
Yeah. So it's the nhs.uk website, and there's a section on there called Book or Manage Your Coronavirus Vaccine. It will ask you, if you know your NHS number, that's great. If you don't, as long as you know your date of birth and your postcode, then you'll be able to sort out your vaccination. And there's a number of sites. All the boroughs of Dudley have got sites. They've got them in Hales Owen, Stourbridge, Dudley Central, Hales Owen, and the Sedgley, Coesley, Gornal areas. Some of them are run by pharmacy sites now. Some are run by primary care for GPs. And we've also got the larger sites. Black Country Museum has finished now, but we've got another site just over the border at Tipton. So there's plenty of opportunities, or you can go slightly into Worcestershire or into Birmingham, whichever's nearest for you.
What facilities are there for people who are mobility impaired or perhaps don't have anybody that can, you know, take them to a vaccination point? What can they do?
I was going to say, voluntary sector to help with that.
Yeah, so there's a number of things that we're doing. So one that you will start to see across Dudley, and some of these happening already, some of the very even more localised sites. There's one within Lye and Hales Owen, and some things can start happening in Briley Hill to add to what the pharmacists are already doing. And we're going to have a mobile unit. So we haven't got a bus in Dudley, we've got a unit that will be going around to different areas. And that does also offer a walking facility as well. And just to kind of in terms of my Black Country colleagues as well, there's all sorts going on across the Black Country, different areas, just to overcome the barriers that people, some people have had in actually being able to get to their vaccine. So, you know, if people don't have access to the internet, there's all sorts of options available, and they'll be seeing those within the local communities. And then I'm sure that help can be put in place if people do need to be able to get to their vaccination site. But they're really local. That's hyper-local is absolutely what you've seen is starting to work really well, and a great response in Dudley.
Where can we find out the locations that the vaccine bus is calling at?
So the first one of those is in Briley Hill, and there's lots of very focused communication in that area. Mm-hmm. And there's a balance here between absolutely want people in that area to go and get that vaccine. We haven't gone too wide around the communications on that, just because we need to manage the expectation. They can do 180 jabs a day. And so that'll start on Wednesday. We're building up from there, and then we'll be posting information around where that's moving. But within the local communities, there's lots of information that has gone out within the Briley Hill area. And I just say a thank you to the voluntary sector and actually some of the people who are working in that area. You've really supported that work. Great support from our volunteers.
I've had a question from Matilda Jenkins. Matilda, thank you for your email. She says, I work in social care. I'm concerned about getting the injection for health reasons. Will I legally have to have the vaccination in order to continue working with vulnerable people? I'm really concerned that I might lose my job. Who can help Matilda, please?
I can start off on that one. I'm sure that others will add. I know that is something that is being considered nationally, isn't it, whether it does become a requirement to do that. Certainly our approach within Dudley is absolutely to support people. And, you know, earlier on there were quite a lot of people who weren't confident in the vaccine and had lots of questions to ask. And there's what we found is that by actually to understand the issues that people are raising, by building confidence, answering the questions, that the vast majority, you know, it is significant, the vast majority have gone ahead and actually had the vaccine. So that's the approach that we're taking within Dudley's to support people in order to answer any questions, and so that people are assured about actually it is very safe and it's the right thing to do.
Dr. Ruth, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think if someone's got individual health concerns, their GP or practice nurse would be very happy to discuss them through with them, because it is really important that the majority, but that we all get vaccinated. And there aren't any reasons why people shouldn't have the vaccination. The only people we're concerned about are if you've had a reaction to an anaphylactic reaction to a vaccine before. But even with that, we can find ways of giving it safely. So I very much encourage anyone who's still reluctant or hesitant to have the vaccine or got a genuine concern because of their health to discuss it with their own primary care clinician. The bit about it making it mandatory, that will be a government decision. It'll be out of our hands. But you know, we would just encourage everyone to get it done and talk about it.
I think one thing that strikes me, particularly when that broke in the news some weeks ago and then they were talking about that, if I worked in social care or I worked in a residential home, for example, I'd certainly want to be vaccinated, because if I was asymptomatic and didn't know it, conceivably I could pass that on to one of the residents or one of their relatives when they come and visit, and I wouldn't want that on my conscience. Mm.
Yeah, I think we need to remember that the vaccine is there for two reasons. One, it's to protect yourself. But secondly, it's to protect other people as well, and it's to break that transmission chain. And that's why it's so important for health and social care workers to have the vaccine, and why they were the first group, together with the very elderly, to be called for the vaccine, because of our role with other people and trying to prevent spread.
What would I add to that also?
Sorry, yes, David.
The list of medical reasons for why a vaccine like the COVID vaccines can't be given is actually really small in terms of the numbers of people affected. So nearly everybody, even if you've got medical complications in the past, nearly everybody can be found a way of having the vaccine safely and without health problems, a very, very small minority won't actually get it for medical reasons. And those people where there's a real medical reason would be exempt anyway from the sort of discussions that we've been reading about. But the other thing to say is that that part of the role of the vaccine is to reduce the risk of transmission to people. You might be saying, well, if everybody in the care home, for instance, that I work has been vaccinated, why would I still need to be vaccinated? And the reason is that the vaccines are incredibly effective, but there's always a small percentage of people, maybe 3 or 4% perhaps, who, for whatever reason, the vaccine hasn't worked. And those are the ones that we worry about, because if somebody is working in the home, for instance, who's infected, didn't know they were infected, and they haven't been vaccinated, for example, to reduce the risk further, then there might be a vulnerable resident of a care home, for instance, who catches COVID even after vaccination, although the vast majority of residents in the care home would be protected against the vaccine. Nothing's absolutely perfect. No. This is about trying to minimise the risk and keep people as healthy and as safe as possible.
Dolores Nelany, you're Head of Environmental Health and Trading Standards for Dudley Council. Tell me about your department's contribution and role to all of this.
Okay, so my team have had many roles through COVID. We've been doing the enforcement of the business restrictions alongside the police, who have been enforcing the restrictions on members of the public. We've been investigating and dealing with outbreaks of work at workplaces, and we've been supporting, advising and assisting businesses to become COVID secure and to take all the necessary measures to protect both their staff and their customers as they traded through the pandemic, and also as they adapted to the reopening after lockdown was eased.
How responsive have you found employers to the legislation, and what resistance have you had from any?
Nearly every employer wants to do the right thing. They want to keep both their customers and their staff safe. So we've had excellent cooperation. If there's been issues, it's been maybe through confusion over the guidance or a lack of understanding. And we've had very, very good compliance amongst businesses in every regard.
Now, I had an email from Kate Sumners, and Kate says, cases are rising across the West Midlands. We've touched on this, Kate, I think. Is this now a third wave? What can we do to stay safe? The Prime Minister said the winter would be bad. Is it likely to get worse again after the summer? Well, I think, Dr. Ruth, you said that it's difficult to try and look that far in the future, didn't you?
Yes, I think we need to be cautious. As you know, hopefully lockdown will be released on the 19th of July, but I still think we do need to remain cautious. I think the concern about winter is that there's lots of other viruses around in the winter. We've not, over the last couple of winters, because of the social distancing, they haven't passed on as quickly and as rapidly as previously. But I think once we're back to more normal life, there will be other viruses being passed between people as well. So that puts demand on hospitals as well as coronavirus. So also concerned about levels of travel. You know, at the moment we are quite restricted from travelling, but in time that will open up as well. But we've got to be cautious of the international transmission of the virus as well. So there's so many things to consider that, yes, it's difficult to predict, but it certainly looks as though we're entering a third wave now, but hopefully we can contain that through the vaccine and through continuing with our behaviours and social distancing.
It's interesting you note about... Oh, sorry, Karen, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, I absolutely fully support everything that Ruth has said, and I think it is, if each one of us actually plays our part in remembering, you know, do you remember way back in March, everybody, not last March, gone the March before, and everybody got really sore hands because they're washing their hands more. So I think there's been lots of lessons for us about actually some of those practices. We need to continue to do those and to do them well, because that will spread, you know, the sickness bug in the winter, you know, norovirus and things that those happen. So changing the way that we continue to live would be really important. And I think the notion of Freedom Day isn't really helpful to us. So I think just bringing in the role of testing, that would be really important, again, to continue over the coming months. And we know that if people are doing that twice a week, the lateral flow, the symptom-free, got no symptoms at all testing, it does pick up some of those asymptomatic cases very early and then just stops that transmission. And that helps us to move more closely towards what people would like to see happening on the 19th of July, as well as any symptoms, getting that PCR test. And it's readily available across Dudley and other parts of the Black Country. And if we do that, again, we can actually stop situations developing, which keeps, you know, children in schools, and it keeps businesses working and takes us ever closer to where we need to be. So I just think it's a useful reminder about those points, as well as the hands, face space, and thinking moving forward, even into the winter, if all the measures are completely relaxed, that we do continue to do the basics well. And again, that will help reduce the spread of winter viruses that are normally around.
I mean, we should really, when, you know, we talk about hands, face space, but in order to minimise the risk of the other viruses being transmitted, we should be washing our hands, you know, as appropriate, as part of our daily routine. If you think about the time prior to COVID, you know, when you come back from somewhere public, when, you know, before you eat your food, when after you've used the toilet, all those sort of common sense things, you know, touching public handrails, bus handles, whatever, we should always wash our hands in the way that we now know to do properly in order to minimise that. But we're going to have to live with COVID, aren't we, in the same way that we live with norovirus and, you know, flu and all the other things. I don't think it's reasonable to imply or even suggest that we're actually going to eradicate it together, altogether, are we?
No, absolutely. There will be outbreaks. There's no doubt about it. But the way that we can all play our part by actually, you know, being, and it is about being sensible, isn't it? And, you know, I'm sure your listeners are kind of fed up of hearing the same things, and we totally understand that. But that is the best way that we get more opportunities to go back to the great parts of how we were living before, is if we just keep doing those things and, as you say, get that get people vaccinated at pace, which is what people are working really hard to be able to do.
Dr. David, what would you say to people who have been brainwashed and are still hell-bent on believing these stupid conspiracy theories about the vaccine that are floating around?
As a starting point, I'm thinking of my wife, who is a hospital consultant. Four of her colleagues died as a result of catching coronavirus in the first wave. One was in her 30s. A couple of them were in their 40s. And these are young people who were susceptible for no other reason than in the wrong place at the wrong time, caught COVID and died. The vaccine is a life-saving intervention, there are a number of different vaccines that work in similar ways, but at the end of the day, the way that I explained to my seven-year-old, who said he wanted a vaccine, except he's not eligible yet, but the way I explained it to him was to think of the coronavirus as being a kind of, you know, a Harry Potter-style monster wearing a wizard's cloak or something. Mm-hmm. The vaccine is the wizard's cloak. In the case of the AstraZeneca vaccine, in the case of the Pfizer vaccine, it's exactly the same chemical, exactly the same protein that the virus itself has. It's just, it's the outer coat of the virus, but not the virus itself. And I can't get my head around why having the outer coat injected into me to train my immune system to recognize it could possibly be more dangerous than having the outer coat plus a series of other genes and other proteins that turn my immune system off to allow it to replicate without the attention of my immune system and potentially kill me because the virus, which is what we're talking about here, as well as triggering immunity in people who overcome it, can also evade immunity and then the body will overreact, and that was one of the things that causes people to die from COVID infection. Mm-hmm. I can't quite get my head around how a vaccine could possibly be more dangerous than the virus when the vaccine is just a small component of the virus, nothing more, nothing less.
But again, I think people have read so much nonsense on the internet and have got to the stage where they're unwilling to believe anything else. Mm. And so I think that mindset is there, and I don't think there's anything that, you know, yourselves or anybody else could do to change that, which is unfortunate, really, because, you know, it's important that everybody gets this, as everybody's, you know, as we've all been saying. Look, we all like...
I'm not sure also why, you know, some of the theories, for example, that you read about, you know, microchips and things. The other thing I'd say is, whose vested interests is it to be doing this? I mean, you know, I carry a microchip around with me all the time. It's called my mobile phone.
Correct.
You know, nobody needs to inject me with a microchip. If you want to track me, just look at my Google timeline. So all of these conspiracies ultimately fail the test of what's in it for them, I think.
Now, we all like holiday, and in order to visit some countries, vaccines are required for things like hepatitis A or typhoid, polio, cholera or yellow fever. If people want to go on holiday, they won't think twice about having those jabs, because very often they're a legal requirement for entry into a specific country. So I fail to understand why there is this barrier, as you've just alluded to, for people to have a vaccine that protects us and each other here at home.
Yeah. I guess some of it is about choice, isn't it? And people like to have choice. We've previously been able to travel very easily in Europe without needing a vaccine. And I think it's just going to take a little while for people to get their heads around that the vaccine is probably going to be an essential part of travelling as well, even to places closer to home. You know, it's normally the more exotic countries that are further away that we've had to have vaccines for before. But it's just a mind shift that we're going to have to make.
What are your take on vaccine passports? Should the government go down that route? Because I have my little blue card that confirms I've had two doses of AstraZeneca. Would that be enough, or will different legislation come in, do you think, that will require us to do that? And how will it be managed?
I think if we need a passport, it will have to be more than the little card, because the little cards probably haven't even got our names on, or we wrote them on ourselves, so it's not got enough authority behind it. So if there is a passport, I think it will have to be a digital process that's developed. Personally, I'm not opposed to a vaccine passport, but I can imagine other people might feel differently about that, and so I'm not going to be the ones to impose it, but I don't know what other members of the panel feel about the passport.
Yes, I'll throw that one open to everybody else. What are your collective thoughts?
I mean, I think that's something that the government will make a decision on. I think an important point for me is that what's really good is that more and more people are actually challenging some of their thinking when they have said no to the vaccine and are actually confident and are taking up the vaccine. And I think in recognising the benefits of actually, you know, being able, it is supporting actually being able to go back to nightclubs and all those sort of things. Those things, in order for those things to happen safely, actually vaccinations is the way forward, as well as the testing and the other things that we've talked about. So we are seeing a really good shift in people who are now, maybe before thinking maybe not, are actually taking up their vaccine offer. And likewise amongst the over 18s, I think across the Black Country, we are seeing a good response and thinking the benefits of this, let's just go and do it.
Absolutely. Now, we've talked earlier on, I think it was you, Dr. Ruth, we were talking about lateral flow tests and polymerase chain reaction, which is PCR tests. What is the difference between those, and when is the appropriate time to use them?
The main difference is the way that they're done. So the lateral flow test is a home test. The closest description is a little pregnancy test kit. So you take the test yourself. People are supplied with their own solutions and kit to do it. I think a lot of employers now are providing these kits. And you literally take your own swab, mix it yourself and put it on the kit, and you get an answer within 20 minutes. The PCR test is one that is sent away. Again, it can be done at home, but then it goes in the post to a lab to be dealt with, or it can be done at one of the testing centres and goes to a lab. I'm sure there's a more technical answer as to what the differences are. It'll be to do with the solutions that that we use, but you know, essentially it's the difference between doing it yourself and getting your own results or sending it away. But the other big difference is why we use them.
Mm-hmm.
The lateral flow test is for people who haven't got symptoms. So this is being mainly used for people going to work, so it's used by employers, but it's also been used in a really good way at the moment for as pilot studies for events. So the Download Festival at the weekend, people did lateral flow tests. The cricket at Edgbaston a couple of weeks ago, people did lateral flow tests. And it's allowing us to have big events again. But you have to commit to doing a lateral flow test on the day of the event. And then there's also a research projects going on where you get a PCR test on the day and 5 days later as well, so that we can monitor what sort of infection might have spread because of these events. So there's some really, really good use of testing going on here. And come July the 19th, we're hoping that restrictions will be lifted a little bit, but I'm absolutely sure that this testing needs to go on and will become part of our lives. It's really important that we test children
mm-hmm.
as well. You know, it's got to be done for schools. And this is how we're going to get through the winter, I think, and hopefully keep the transmission rates down by having really good, thorough testing and people really getting on board with the testing.
It's very easy to get a lateral flow test because I just went onto the government's website and I ordered some, and they're free of charge. They came to me literally the next day, and I have my lateral flow test day is Tuesday and Thursday of each week, so I do that. And then obviously I would take, you know, appropriate action. If I had a positive test, would I be right in thinking that I would then go and request a PCR test?
Yes.
I think it'd be great to bring Dolores in terms of the brilliant work that they've been doing, actually.
Yes. Okay. Just to add to Ruth's information, so a lateral flow test, as Ruth has said, is for someone who doesn't have any symptoms. So it finds those people who, not having any symptoms, are going to be unaware that they may have the virus and maybe unwittingly spreading it to others. So that's the a rapid test that you can use at home regularly. Now, if you have COVID symptoms or the classic symptoms, the rise temperature, new or continuous cough, or loss or change to taste or smell, or any other symptoms such as a head cold, headache, sore throat, sneezing, perhaps you think you've got hay fever when you don't normally suffer from it, or are otherwise feeling unwell, then the test to go for is the PCR test. If you have symptoms, it's already indicating the possibility that you may be that it could be COVID, so you undertake the supervised or mainly supervised PCR test unless they're done at home, and they go to the lab. So the lateral flow test is the regular testing for people going to work, school, college, events, as Ruth has said, and they're widely available from many sources. So in the Dudley Borough, you can take a supervised test at our static site at Saltwell Centre in Netherton. About 40 of our local pharmacies will undertake a supervised lateral flow test in the pharmacy, and our website will tell you all the venues. We've got about 60 pharmacies that are giving out boxes of lateral flow tests to anyone who wants them, and they're offering to show the member of the public a supervised test in the pharmacy if they want before they start testing at home. Our public health team and our team of COVID business advisors have been out in the community and into businesses and workplaces, and they're handing out boxes of the lateral flow test to workers and to members of the public to take home and use at home. We've been out in the main shopping centres in the last few weeks, and this week we're currently in the Churchill precinct in Dudley and also in Briley Hill Marketplace. And then you can also order online lateral flow test to come to your home as well. So there's lots and lots of availability. You can get them from other venues such as Dudley Library. They are available, so lots of availability. And really do encourage people to be doing these twice weekly. They are intended for regular testing, so used in the context of regular testing for someone without symptoms, they are a great way to know that you are staying safe and therefore protecting other people as well.
And of course,
if I can just echo that, ideally we want, you know, everybody in Dudley, all adults and those who are going to secondary school, actually do twice, if you can do that twice a week lateral flow testing, if you've got absolutely no symptoms at all, that will really help us to identify cases early and then actually prevent that spread. And I know that across the Black Country, that's what we're absolutely promoting, and it works. Any symptoms, get one of the other tests. And I think just a thank you to our voluntary sector and our some of our members, and also the kind of Cornbow Shopping Centre, who've really supported this initiative to get as many of these tests and to have conversations with people across the borough who've not done them, not known quite how to use the test. It's really simple, but to have great feedback. So, you know, get on board, everybody, and do your twice a week lateral flow. Put it in your diary. It's a good reminder then. An appointment today is to do my test twice a week.
That's right. You just build it into your routine.
Can I just add to that and then upload the results? That would be the ideal. So what we're getting really good at is doing the testing. It's so simple to actually just upload the results. And that helps us then when we're monitoring what's going on across the borough. If we know actually not just the people who've been positive, but also all those who've done the test who've come back negative, that would be fantastic. Really simple. Takes a couple of minutes, but that would be great. Thank you.
There are still time for your questions. If you've got a question that you'd like me to put to Dolores, to Dr. Ruth, to Karen or Dr. David, you can text me to 63446, starting your text with the letters BCR. Text will cost you 10 pence plus your standard message rate. Or you can drop me an email via the website blackcountryradio.co.uk. Or if you've downloaded our rather smart and shiny new app, you can use that to drop me a message as well. Now, we've talked about symptom-free testing, and there's clearly a lot going on in Dudley. Dolores, from an employer perspective, if employers have any concerns, or perhaps they change their internal mapping of their premises, how can you offer continual support to them? Because they may have to redefine their work, the way in which they work within their work practices. So what help is available for them?
Well, our team of environmental health officers are helping businesses on a daily basis with their inquiries. We are responsible for health and safety enforcement in a large sector of the local businesses, including hospitality, leisure, retail. So we're out there in the field visiting businesses. And we also have a team of COVID business advisors who are also out on a daily basis in and out of shops and other small businesses. Doing checks and issuing the COVID customer secure posters where businesses have met the basic standards of COVID secure. So we are freely available, willing to give help and advice and make site visits as necessary. And I'll obviously also respond to inquiries from both members of the public who might be customers in businesses, and then offer the appropriate advice as necessary to the business that might need the additional help.
Should employers fail to comply, what legal ramifications are there?
If an employer didn't provide COVID secure workplace for their staff or customers, there are the remedies under the Health and Safety at Work Act, which my team of environmental health officers are able to enforce. In some industries, it's the Health and Safety Executive, so factories and so on. There are obviously penalties for breaching some of the coronavirus restrictions, for requiring staff to attend work if the employer knows they're positive, which issues is not something we know goes on. And obviously there are penalties for breaches of dangerous practices like not encouraging close contacts to self-isolate and so on. And we do offer, as a council, we offer advice, welfare support to employees on low incomes who might not get their full pay when they're self-isolating. There is financial support and there's welfare support in terms of accessing food and medication and also things like emotional well-being support, loneliness and so on. So the team here at Dudley offer a wide range of support to employers and employees.
So there really is no excuse for employers not to comply.
No, you know, why encourage someone that you know is a risk to your colleagues, your staff and your customers to come to work? It's generally through ignorance rather than deliberate non-compliance. With all the support available, it is very easy for employers to do the right thing. And at the end of the day, if you're encouraging your employees to do regular lateral flow tests twice a week, then it picks up as soon as somebody's infectious rather than they then go on to develop symptoms and take it into the workplace, which might result in the workplace having to close or it being spread to other people. So we are definitely encouraging lateral flow tests as a good business continuity plan for businesses to enable them to carry on safely.
I am conscious of the time, but what I do want to explore with you is the right time to isolate and how to isolate, because when should we do that? Is that when we have a positive lateral flow test, or should that be when we get a positive PCR test?
Well, if you have classic symptoms of COVID, so that's the high temperature, the new continuous cough, or the change in taste or smell, you should isolate straight away. Get a PCR test straight away and isolate straight away whilst awaiting those results. If you get a positive from a lateral flow test, you are required to get a confirmatory PCR, but you should be self-isolating because there is an indication there that you could be positive. However, if you get a negative PCR within 2 days of a positive lateral flow test, it can release you from self-isolation. And you do have to do the whole of the 10-day self-isolation at the current time, as does all members of your household who've obviously been in close contact with you. They do have to isolate and stay away from, you know, going to work, going out to work and shopping and all the usual things for the whole period.
Can I just add around the kind of the new symptoms of this sort of of a runny nose and a sore throat and headache, which again I think it's really important to pick up that we are seeing more and more of this. So we are actively encouraging, we've been doing this in Dudley for a long time, if you just don't feel well, go and get a PCR test, because it may be, you know, it hasn't shown up through lateral flow, which, you know, that they are for asymptomatic. So it's the diffuse symptoms that may actually show that you are positive for PCR. In fact, my own daughter is an ample, so she, you know, she woke up, she was a very, very slight temperature, but a bit of a sore throat. So actually, so she did that, her lateral flow was negative. Sent her for a PCR just in case, because, the next day, she's absolutely right as rain. It was negative. She was fine. But I think what we are seeing, and I think some of our primary care colleagues have seen people coming through with those symptoms who, and they don't normally have hay fever, so it's not hay fever. So I just urge people listening, actually, if you do get those symptoms, go and get a PCR. There's plenty of availability, and just rule out that it isn't COVID.
It is better to be safe than sure. I know that's an old cliche, but, you know, when you think about the ramifications, and also if you don't take responsibility for it and you inadvertently pass it on to somebody else or other people, then, as we all know, the results are catastrophic. Mm-hmm. We've talked about now the Delta variant. Let's just have a quick minute or so just reminding ourselves the ages that can actually book for vaccines now, where these drop-in and pop-up clinics are, because I know we talked about that at the very beginning of our discussion, but for people who have just joined us, they will no doubt want to know that. So if we can just have a quick reminder, perhaps Dr. Ruth, if you could start on this one. I think it's probably best to start with you, but if you can just just remind us of how we go about doing that, please.
Yes, I'm happy to start with that. So basically, anybody over 18 now who hasn't had a vaccination is eligible for one. So if you're over 18, and it's going to be mainly people in the 18 to 40 group that haven't already had the opportunity for a vaccine, you can book by either phoning 119 or going on the NHS.uk website and going to the section book or manage your coronavirus vaccination. And you'll be able to put your date of birth and postcode in or your NHS number, and it will tell you the sites that are closest to you. And we do have plenty of sites across the Dudley Borough, run by different groups, either pharmacists or GP practices. But the other thing is that the big weekend that we've got coming up, where there will be more drop-in facilities. So most of the sites will have drop-in opportunities this weekend, as well as the pre-bookables. So there should be fairly easy for people to get vaccines this weekend. As Karen said, each of those drop-ins will have limited amounts of vaccine. And I know we've seen stuff on the news in other cities where people have been queuing around the city waiting for the vaccine and then been told there's no availability. But I think we're getting to the point now where there should be something, there is availability for everybody, but you know, hopefully easy to get this weekend, but otherwise pre-book.
Yes.
If I could just to add to that, I mean, across the Black Country, there will be lots of offers. So really do urge people to actually look out for those book and actually look at what the walk-in offers are across the region. It's really important.
Okay. Well,
as well for young people, you know, you might feel that you're fit and healthy. You know, I know a 30-year-old who died from COVID. It's rare, but it happens. But there's also the long COVID that affects people, younger people as well as older people, and you can be ill for months afterwards. This is not just a bit of a snuffle and a bit of flu. It can be really serious, and if it's not serious for you, it could be serious for the person that you infect. But you may never know who they are, but they will be one of those statistics if you catch it and then transmit it on to somebody more vulnerable than you.
And that is the worry, isn't it, as you were saying. We've only got a couple of minutes left, so if I could just have a quick 20 seconds from each of you, a quick sum up and your last sort of parting message, please. And we'll start with you, Dr. David, please.
It's not a snuffle. It's a lot worse than that. You know, we've got something which has had a mortality of, you know, about 10 times higher than flu, and it's spread a lot faster than flu. And fortunately now we have a vaccine to get over it. But, you know, we are in the grip of what has been the biggest international health crisis for a century. If it feels weird, if it feels like it's been hard work over the last year and a half, that's because it has been.
Karen Wright, please.
Yeah, please get the vaccine. It's safe, it's good, and please testing regularly. Let's look out for each other and continue to support each other in Dudley.
Dr. Ruth, please.
For me, it's about not being blasé, because I think as the infection rates have gone down, people have started to get back to their normal lives, which is great. But we mustn't be blasé about this, and we must be thinking about testing and being on the watch out for symptoms all the time.
Dolores, a quick 10 seconds from you, please. Doris Delaney.
If you're going out to work, protect your colleagues and customers by doing your regular twice a week lateral flow test.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Dolores Delaney, Ruth Edwards, Karen Wright and Dr. David Pitches. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you.